Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And the kissometer is at a scorching 99%.
Yep. Yes. And we return. Well, first, let's not get it too ahead of ourselves. We're going to edge this one a little bit.
And we've got goons later this week, too.
I know, dude. This is a sexual week. So we're talking about minute 47 through 48.
Yep.
We return in media smooch.
No.
We're in the middle of it. They're going in.
They haven't locked
lips yet. Yeah. Okay. So in media pre-smooch. and then
all these Pope movies you've been watching, they're dropping little bits of Latin on you.
That's a normal filmmaking term. That's not just because we got a new Pope, a Chicago Pope,
a White Sox Pope. God bless him.
I am not Catholic, but I think it's funny.
Lord knows being a White Sox fan is a challenge in and of itself. So if you're a White Sox fan, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Could be worse. You could be a Rockies fan right now.
And yeah, we're about to, like a cartoon style, bust through the top of this thermometer, this kissometer, excuse me. And they lean in and we finally get it.
Steam, like engine sound effects and everything. Too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we get it. They kiss.
For 12 seconds.
Yeah.
We get some close-up shots, and then we get a shot on a camera from a guide wire that's doing like a kind of around the
It's very
Dune kind of thing,
very romantic drone shots.
And then we get a very what I would call uncharacteristic transition here, where it's just weird editing fade to black. Before, we had the practical effect fade to black where the lights actually like dimmed on Jessica after she had taken the water of life. This one was just like a, I don't know. I felt like that transition kind of put me out of it.
It was a very, very classic fade to black.
Yeah.
Whereas like it was an edited fade to black. Whereas the one with Jessica was someone turned the lights down.
That is literally what I just said.
I wasn't listening. Sorry. sorry. I was thinking about how we missed a point in my notes that I'm gonna have to circle back to.
Okay. Yep.
So we get the romantic drone shots of the first initial kiss, and then they break apart and Chani goes back in for more. So this is not just a kiss, this is a full-on makeout sesh now.
Hell yeah, dude.
They put their arms around each other. There's lots of lens flare.
Yep.
J.J. Abrams snuck onto set.
He was there for a day.
Yeah. And we get the romantic swelling of the strings, and pretty sure it wasn't the only thing swelling. I think we got our first confirmed instance of beef swelling.
A beef swelling?
First confirmed instance of beef swelling in the Dune movies here.
Oh, we love a good beef swelling.
Look it up, kids.
A good beef swelling and a great gross protuberance.
Yes. and then we get
shout out Leto the second.
Yes. And then after this, yes, that is where we get our fade to black. So sorry, I had to go back for that, but I think it was important.
Yeah. All right. That was worth not listening to me and then repeating exactly what I just said.
Yeah, I think it was worth repeating what you just said.
Oh, my God.
Anyways. So we get out of this hot, steamy makeout sesh, and we are we're shown shots of the Fremen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all kitted up, and they are romantically making their way out of the siege. We still get the string music in the background, so I'm forced to think that all of this is romantic that we're about to see.
Different kind of romance, but yes.
Yeah. Paul, he's got that post-makeout glow.
Yep.
On him, and he looks over.
He's got that post-makeout clarity.
Yeah. and he looks over and he sees Chani in like her linen head covering, and they romantically smile at each other, and we know it's romantic because of the music.
Yep.
And where do we go from here?
Well, I would like to make some observations between Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2.
Yeah, go for it.
This is similar to some of the prescient visions that Paul had prior, but not exactly the same. So we talked about how Paul's prescience is more of just like a, not a direct truth of what will happen, but mm-hmm. just kind of like a general idea of everything.
Do things always happen exactly the way you dream them? Not exactly.
Right. In their, in the prescient visions that Paul had, he had a vision of following this girl through these, you know, caves and caverns and everything. But what we saw in Dune Part 1 was Paul following Chani. They embrace, but then she stabs him in the gut and mm-hmm. kills him.
Yeah.
This is not the case here. In Dune Part 1, there's also that's a similar prescient vision of this girl with the linen shawl looking back at him mm-hmm. and everything.
Right, right.
So we're seeing little like hints and callbacks to those visions that we had before, even though the context is different or like it's not exactly the same.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes total sense.
But then we cut to the top of this ridge that all of the Fremen and everything are climbing up, which, by the way, before we leave from it, I noticed that Shishkali is just kind of like perched on a ledge in this, you know, canyon as they're walking mm-hmm. up, and she's just like watching everything.
Yeah.
Just,
you think she approves?
At this point, yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, you know, what we talked about with David last week with Shishkali's, you know, transition into accepting of Paul and everything. Mm-hmm. Shishkali's in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But we cut to where the Fremen have now made it to the top of these cliffs, and you know, we can see they're all like army man laid out flat on the mm-hmm. on the cliffside, and we have two shoulder mounted laser guns.
Yep.
We do have another more direct callback to Dune Part 1, though.
Yeah.
So, minute 2 of Dune Part 1 is when we see Chani on a cliffside overlooking a bunch of other Fremen who are laid out with mm-hmm. laser guns. Notably, Jameis is there. However, I do not feel that that moment was... And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit. In hindsight, I don't feel that that moment was necessarily a prescient vision, as it was just, this is the state of what's happening on Arrakis.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because Chani is there. Jameis is there. They're shooting laser guns at spice harvesters and everything.
Did Paul not have prescient visions of Jameis too, though?
He did.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility, sure. But I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you.
I think, yeah, and I just think that those shots in Part 1 were more of a, here's the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But Chani is wearing the same exact outfit that she wore in Part 1, down to the weird, like, forehead covering thing that was going on. However, here... The forehead covering thing is fully covering her eyebrows, mm-hmm. whereas before it was a little higher up. Small detail, but that's what this podcast is.
Come on, costume department. I'm sure they had a DVD of Dune Part 1 laying around.
It wasn't in the budget.
Yeah, fair.
But I felt that was a really cool callback to Part 1, where it is almost the exact same shot. The one in Part 2 is much closer up of Chani, where it's just her face and like kind of her shoulders, whereas before it's a, and sorry if I'm getting this wrong to all of you film nerds, I believe it's like a profile shot. Well, no, profile's from the side. It's more like medium distance kind of shot, not necessarily a close up like we have in Dune Part 2.
Fair enough. Okay.
I don't know these terms. I'm not a film student. I just talk
just
about
a fan.
I just talk about Dune a lot.
So So yeah, so we get the we get a shot of Paul romantically looking through his spotter scope, and then the Lazooka is romantically fired and romantically cuts through one of these spice harvesters,
which romantically explodes and pours spice all out over the desert.
Exactly. Yep. And again, we know it's romantic because of the music.
Yep. Well, there's also two ornithopters romantically circling each spice harvester as they romantically harvest side by side across the desert.
They're very cute together.
Well, until one of them fucking dies.
Yeah, well, yeah, such is life.
Yeah.
But we don't linger here too long. At this point, we cut back to like the map room where we met Harkey Keitel earlier.
I believe you mean the Solito console.
Does it have a name?
Yeah. Art and Soul gives it the name Solito console.
I don't know if we...
We talked about this.
Oh, okay. Well.
Because we talked about how it was inspired by...
the comic books.
The French comic book. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Lone Sloan comic book.
Okay, gotcha.
That Denis Villeneuve was a fan of ever since he was a child.
That name completely escaped my memory, so thank you.
That's why I'm here.
And we don't get any words out of the map room, but we do see the telltale,
Telltale?
Telltale?
Yeah, telltale.
Did I say telltale?
Yeah, you said telltale. Sorry.
My southern accent comes out occasionally. Telltale. Occasionally it comes out. We see the telltale signs of them losing contact with the harvester because one of the little dots turns from blue to red.
White to red.
White to red.
And it's actually like a little diamond shape.
Sure.
And it has a really cool transition effect with some of the extra little bits where you see it an arrow begins to point down and it mm-hmm. shrinks downward on the map.
Nice. Very cool. Very, very cool.
Love these little CG attention to detail things.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, but in time with the music, there's a big, timpani hit of a bomb bomb kind of thing. And the map and the entire map room shakes a little bit and the map flickers in time with the music
Okay. I did notice the flicker. I didn't notice the music cues to it. That's cool. Love a timpani.
Yep.
That was
as a percussionist yourself. That was one of your
That was what I played for my freshman and sophomore years of high school. I was the timpanist in my high school, and won some awards for playing it. So yeah. So anyways, back to Dune.
Yeah.
The dot goes away. They get the little visual, implying that the harvesters were destroyed, romantically, of course.
Yeah. Well, we romantically saw the laser,
yes. Yep.
Destroy one of them. So it's safe to assume that it was the other was destroyed.
Yeah. and some more explosions back at the harvester before we cut back to Paul walking back to the siege.
Yeah, we get a nice little trailing shot of Paul. I don't think it's the siege. I think it's a Fremen or a Fedaiken camp.
Okay.
The
FOB, the forward operating base.
Yeah, it seemed pretty open, but we see that the Fedaiken have fully embraced Paul at this point because as he's walking, they're patting him on the back and the shoulders and everything.
Yeah.
And for a very brief moment, I'm stealing the movie's own thunder here, but for a very brief moment here, we can see, if you go frame by frame, you can see Paul's eyes of Ibad that he has.
Yeah. I noticed that. Yep. It's very subtle.
Yeah.
It is very, very subtle, but we, what is that? What is that John Mulaney joke where he talks about his doctor going to see his doctor a couple of times over the span of a couple of years, and then he says something and the doctor was wearing glasses in the second visit to imply that time had passed. That's kind of what I feel like is happening here.
Yeah,
Paul's eyes are just a little bit blue to imply that time has passed.
Sure.
And I could have swore we got some good jobs from the Fremen.
We don't really hear what they're saying.
I thought we did. And I thought that was going to be our only words, quote unquote, of the minute.
Yeah.
Because this is otherwise a wordless minute.
This is a all music minute.
Yep. All strings, all romance, all the time.
But we end the minute with a nice little sundown shot of Chaul walking along the cliffside overlooking the desert. And,
romantically, of course.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's sundown. They're up there together just spending some time looking at Arrakis.
That's right. Yeah, and that's it. Again, no book notes for me because none of this happens.
Yep.
And we're not going to talk about the orgy, so... That's it.
Yeah.
Anything else from Art and Soul? You said that you're done for
the
week.
We're done with Art and Soul for the week.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's surprisingly sparse for what our later episodes for this week are going to be. So.
Correct. All right. Well, let's get into them. Although I'm going to say once again, go ahead and hop on that Dune Wiki, dear listener, and just type in beef swelling. And you're just going to get to, you'll read a short passage from one of the later Dune books. It's not going to spoil anything for you, but it is hilarious.
Pretty sure it's God Emperor.
Well, it's one of them. I forget. Yeah. But it's about Leto the second. How would you write that out in Roman numerals? Leto 2, 2.
I don't know.
I
call him Leto the second because. I
mean, you're technically correct.
Yeah. Paul's very creative with naming his children.
Yeah. Well, he's got to get it in there. He's got to get one that's named after that. Anyways. Okay. Will you take us out, John, please? In this.
Romantically, of course.
Romantically.
Yeah. As always, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, don't forget to rate and, you know, if you want to, give the show a comment and share the show with your friends if they like Dune. We have a shitload of episodes. Alrighty, well, we will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute. We will talk to you later.
See ya.